This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with composer Max LL, or to give you your full name, Max Lacoste Lebouy, and it's wonderful to meet you and have a chance to talk about your gorgeous music for Spiritfarer.
Thank you, Kate. It's nice meeting you, too.
This is such a beautiful game. It's really, it came along at just the right time, I think, last year during COVID, toward the end of the year, when we've had to say goodbye to so many people. And the premise of the game is very simple. Stella has been tasked by Karen, who traditionally ferries souls across the Styx River. She's in charge of doing that now, and so she goes on a journey to collect these lost souls and help care for them and give them whatever they need to cross over through that Everdoor. And I know you've worked with Thunder Lotus before, and I know you have a long-term relationship, a long-standing relationship with one of the developers. What was their pitch to you about the game?
Good question. So I always come into projects very early on, because I have, like you said, I've been friends with the founder of Thunder Lotus since we were since we were in teenagers, actually. We used to play music together.
Wow.
And so when he decided to start his own company and pitched the idea for the first game, which was Jotun. Some like to say, you know, I was there from the moment, from the first sketches, I was there, and he wanted me to write music for the Kickstarter trailer, the Kickstarter presentation for funding, to fund the first project, which is really great, because then you can sort of set the pace musically for what the game will be. And it's really good to be there early on and to have those discussions with the team. And the way it worked for Spiritfarer is that if you look at the games that Thunder Lotus, the studios they have made, they're all related to death in one way or the other. But what was very interesting about this one is that they wanted to discuss death in a way that hadn't been done before. Well, from my knowledge and from their knowledge, is for us to be comfortable with the idea, to sort of break from the taboos of discussing death, you know, amongst each other, and make having the discussions around death be something that's, you know, casual and even comforting sometimes, a game that would make us feel better about the idea of grief, heritage, passage, around the idea of having to say goodbye. Not that it wasn't going to be something that's deeply emotional and sad and very difficult for a lot of us, but at least if we can bring, if this could be a way to better discuss those themes in society or within our family, maybe it would help a few of us, you know, deal with death in a better way. And I thought the idea was amazing. And you described the game beautifully in the introduction. And I think what's so great about this game is that most of the mechanics and most of the game is built around the idea of caring, care, compassion. And it's such a great thing, because usually when you're playing video games, we're so disconnected with what death really is. You know, we're killing sometimes, when we're playing a game, we're killing hundreds, thousands of people, you know, in a process that's supposed to be joyful and playful. And we forget what it actually means to end a life. You know, we distance ourselves from the concept. And so it was nice for a change to discuss death that way. And that's how it was first pitched to me. And, you know, the artists at the studio are so talented. And they draw a lot of inspiration from the worlds of Disney and Miyazaki movies. And to have all that pieced together with the themes that they wanted to portray in the game, it was like a great opportunity for me to explore those themes musically as well.
Thank you.
There are so many beautiful settings and wonderful characters, and we can highlight some of them in our discussion. I'm curious about how you got started with the musical ideas and kind of developing the overall sound for the music.
Sure. I think one of the first conversations at the time, Nicolas Guérin, Nico, had just arrived at the studio as the new creative director for the game. So they sort of conceptualized the game. Well, the first, you know, rough ideas of the game and sketches were made before he arrived. But then he brought like a whole new level of experience to the game making process once he arrived in the studio and took the design to another level. And we had discussions very early on about his musical influences. Some of them were similar to my own and some of them were quite different. He had a lot of influences from, he's from France, I'm from Quebec, Canada. And, you know, there are some common denominators there, language being one, but there's also a lot of cultural differences. But there was some influences that came from his, you know, home place. And there were some influences that came from, you know, other kinds of art forms, whether movies or other video games, traditional music or classical music. And we sort of discuss different genres. And for me, my role was also to see, like, what's the common denominator in all those genres, you know. But I had an idea as well of what I wanted to do at first. So after those discussions, I also, you know, collected a lot of the sketches and the first conceptual art sketches they had made, which is, you know, in itself very inspiring to see the work the artists are doing from the get-go. And so I took all that in and started writing a theme suite, which became the track called Spiritfarer in the soundtrack. That sort of laid the foundation of what sort of identity, colors, instrumentation, the rest of the soundtrack would have. I was writing an album at the time, a personal album. The album is called Golestan. It was inspired by the time I had traveled in Iran, and I was immersed in that. And it had become really difficult because I was sort of halfway through and kind of stuck in terms of inspiration. And I took a break from that just to write the main theme from Spiritfarer, that initial theme suite. I think it was like I wrote it in a week or two, something like that, part time, and it felt really good. It felt really good to write, I don't know, that kind of music that you'd feel, that's not too intense, that's sort of comforting, but also can go grand and beautiful in terms of emotion. And it felt like a nice break. And so I wrote that, I think, in February 2018. And it became the blueprint or the map for the rest of the score. Thank you. I don't remember the process exactly, but I think I sat down at the piano for the, you know, for a few days just writing down ideas. And when I thought I had a clear idea of a melody in my head, then I went and sort of orchestrated the rest in the sequencer, tracked some instruments, etc. Yeah.
Wow. What I really appreciate about listening to the soundtrack, but then also hearing the music in the game, is it's such a nice companion, because Stella, she's almost like a blank slate in a way, because she is so involved with caring for these spirits and going from one island to another and managing their needs. And it seems as though the music really kind of supports her in a way. And then, you know, by association, it supports us, because we get nourishment kind of from the music. And so it's just such a wonderful fit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think you described it beautifully there. I don't know what to add to that, except that I think that was the idea from the start. I think we wanted to put the players in a certain mood while playing the game, and the music had to be comforting, mm-hmm. you know, and sort of, you know, like a warm, gentle hug, or, you know, something that would be comforting all the way through. Sometimes it diverges from that a little bit, but most of the time it sort of follows Stella and her journey and tries to, it sort of has this comforting role as well.
Well, one of the things that's so interesting about it is the characters that she meets. And as she's adding more and more spirits or souls on her ship, the ship has to grow with them. And so she makes regular visits to the shipyard and talks with Albert, who's just this amazing character. And I really love the busyness and kind of the sound of the activity going on at the shipyard, which is a nice break from the quietness of a lot of the music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, you have to adapt to the characters when you're writing, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, comforting and calm music won't work for everything. Sometimes it has to be a little bit more playful, sometimes a little bit more chaotic. For Albert, I mean, it was kind of instinctive to have sort of, you know, metal noises and drum rolls and drum noises and hammer noises sort of in the background of that music for that character's theme. But it's also playful, because, you know, building your boat should be a playful activity. So it's, yeah, I guess it came from that. At some point, I had the idea of having the music for Albert evolve, or, you know, music for the shipyard evolve as you're building your boat. So it getting a bit more dramatic, a bit more intense as the boat grew bigger. But I sort of dropped the idea early on. I mean, everyone fell in love at the studio, fell in love with the theme and liked it as it was. And it would maybe have been not a necessary mechanic to implement. So we dropped the idea. I dropped the idea personally, but yeah, it's a cool cue.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And like I said, it's a nice contrast to some of the quieter cues, like at sea, and the cue when Stella is visiting the garden and growing the garden, because these souls have a lot of unique requests for things that they need. So she's gathering seeds and stuff, and then the scenes in the garden where you're watching them grow. Are really, really special.
Yeah, from what I can see from the people that have been enjoying the music, a lot of them have been talking about the song that allows you to grow the vegetables faster as one of their favorites. That theme made its way to the end credit theme and the theme song for the game, What Will You Leave Behind? It's such a pleasure. The team at Thunder Lotus, they describe a concept to me. You know, we're going to have Stella play some music and allow vegetables to grow. And that seems, you know, interesting, but you never know how cool it is until you receive, you know, the first screen captures and you see it implemented in the game. So it's always a pleasure to me, to get that footage and or to play that part in the game for the first time and be like, oh, this is going to be so fun to write to.
Yeah, I'll bet. It must be kind of fun. I've talked with composers who are working for studios that are many, many time zones apart. And it must have been nice to have the studio right in Montreal where you are, so you could toss ideas back and forth really quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, problem with being apart like we are right now is that there were periods in the past years where I was apart from the studio for a while because I was busy with other projects. And you know, then you sort of lose the creative flow and the pace you have when you're in constant contact with the team. So whenever we'd be apart for a while, whether it was because I was abroad or working on other projects, then I'd come back to the studio in Montreal and meet them again. And just discussing, you know, the game with them in person, you know, around, in their studio, it brought a lot of energy, creative energy. And you feel motivated, you know, you leave the studio and you're like, okay, I'm gonna go back to the studio and write some ideas down right now. And that's what's so lovely about working together. But the great thing is now is that we also can work remotely really efficiently. We have the tools to do that, which wouldn't have been possible, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. And so that's lovely as well. And it sort of creates another working dynamic. And I mean, I miss seeing the team in person, but it's also great to see some of the folks from the team once in a while. And you know, I went and took a long walk with Will, the founder, yesterday outside, and you know, we discussed plenty of things. And it's always great to catch up with the team. Yeah, I guess it's a privilege to be able to work, you know, in the same city. And Montreal is a great city for video game developers.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of energy there. A lot of studios, ranging from huge ones to independent ones like Thunder Lotus. And how much of the soundtrack is like live instruments, and how much is samples? I mean, were you able to include your own performances or performances from other musicians that you've worked with in the soundtrack?
Yeah, sure. Good question. So whenever whenever you're envisioning a soundtrack for a game or a film or anything else, there's budget consideration. So for Spiritfarer, with the music budget we had, it wouldn't have been possible to write 90 minutes of music, an hour and a half of music, with the whole, you know, 40 to 60 piece orchestra. So you sort of have to be creative and work your way around that. So I do track with soloists, or in the case of Spiritfarer, I tracked a lot of the instruments myself. And I layer that on top of samples. And that allows us to have a bigger sound, even if we don't have the budget to hire, you know, a lot of musicians. Samples are used to sort of thicken the sound and make it larger. And solo instruments are used to have, you know, a bit more texture and intimacy and realism sometimes when you're layering that on top of the ensembles. I tracked a lot of instruments myself, piano, guitars, some percussions. I sing a little bit here and there, but it's sort of masked with everything that's going on, you know, make mouth percussions and stuff like that. Sometimes to remind myself, I look around the studio just to see what's lying around. There's some mandolin on there, some charango, some sitar. Yeah, a lot of various solo instruments, but I also hired a violinist, a harmonica player on there. Yeah, so there are a lot of soloists sparkled here and there. It was the same thing with Sundered. I mean, I hired a very talented cellist that's also from Montreal, Sheila Hannigan, and she played all over the soundtrack. For this one, I needed various solo instruments, so there's a bigger variety of things. But yeah, that's what I usually try to do. Maybe for future projects with the studio, we'll have a budget that will allow us to track with even bigger ensembles, and we'll see what happens. I mean, in the end, what counts is for me, it's does the emotion come through, you know, in the music? That's always my barometer, whether I'm writing for live musicians or whether I spend hours and hours programming, you know, a violin line to go under another performance. The emotion is my barometer, like I said. So if the emotions comes through, then it's good enough for me, you know.
Well, there are so many wonderful moments where emotion is just really, you just feel it. And it was... Gwen is the first spirit that Stella meets, and eventually she's ready to move on, and it was really just so kind of emotionally charged to take her to the Everdor and say goodbye. And I'm wondering if there were some other characters that you really got emotionally attached to as you were writing their cues.
Yeah, it's great to see how everyone has their own character that they get really attached to. And some of them, you know, are, let's say they usually make the list more than others in terms of characters that really went straight to the heart of the people playing the game. And a name that comes back often, and it was the same for me, was Alice. And Alice is sort of suffering of dementia, and she... obviously, it relates to personal experiences, but, and even recent events. And, you know, she sort of forgets where she is sometimes. She remembers her, you know, her husband and her past life. Sometimes she's mistaking other people on the boat for her husband or for her. If I remember correctly, she thinks Stella is her daughter at some point. I'm sorry if I made a mistake here. I played the game a while ago, but I think she mistakes Stella for her daughter. I'm sorry, Nico, if I made a mistake here. But I mean, while I was playing for the first time and I brought Alice to the Everdor, then yeah, I felt really, really emotional, like I hadn't been before playing the game. And that's sort of one point where I realized how special the game was in that sense, is when I first brought Alice to the Everdor, to bring her to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so definitely Alice for me.
And there are so many characters that really you spend a long time with because they have quite a few things that you've got to get sorted out for them. And so the longer you spend with them on the ship and the more you see to their needs, the harder it is to say goodbye to them. So I think that speaks to the writing of the game. It's just absolutely brilliant and so genuine and really just very real.
And another thing about Alice is just, I just remember that, is that you take Alice on a journey. She always wanted to see sort of this winter village that you go to with her. And she's super happy to be able to have that experience, once she's there. And the conversations that you have with her at that point are really emotional. It's so beautiful to be able to offer her that before she moves on. And that's also what's great about the game, is to, it helps in with the grief in that sense, because you're able to do one last thing for the spirits. And it's not about just, being with them before they leave and, giving them food and, doing those very simple things, but important things for them. It's also about helping them move on and helping yourself move on in the process by doing this one last thing for them, that this one last important thing. Yeah, the writing itself is, what can I say? A lot of it, there are a couple of people who wrote in the game, but a lot of it is Nico, who was the creative director on the game as well. And he did a great job. And it's sometimes funny, sometimes sad, and sometimes I can even hear him talking when I'm listening to some of the characters, which is funny. But a lot of the characters were inspired by people surrounding the game developers or the game makers. So a lot of characters were inspired by family members of some people in the studio, or friends, or people that had passed away, or grandparents, parents, which makes it even more real and more interesting, because the characters in the game are not totally fictional. They're actually really inspired by people who actually existed.
Yeah, and they're three-dimensional. They've got their quirks, and it's such a wonderful collection of personalities. And you mentioned the Winter Village, and there are so many beautiful locations in the game. And I wanted to mention right up front, but I'll throw it in here, that the game has been nominated by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences for a DICE Award for Outstanding Achievement for Animation. So, I mean, congratulations to the team. That's a huge accomplishment.
Oh, wow, that's great. I'm not following that too closely at the moment, but yeah, that's great. I mean, they deserve it. The animation team is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that they created these various locations, the islands where Stella goes, Hummingbird is a location where she goes a few times. And what struck me about it the first time I heard it and visited the island is how French that sounds. And I guess knowing your background in Montreal and Nico's in France, I mean, that's totally understandable. But was that intentional?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that was part of the influences. I mean, Hummingbird is based on a typical Alsacian town. Alsace, which is a region in the east part of France, that that borders Germany, and I mean, Yeah, the French influence is all over there. I mean, it was a prerequisite. Before I even started writing music, it had to have, for that part of the game, for that region, Nico really insisted on having the French influence. And of course, I mean, there's accordion there, and it's blended with the orchestra for it to have similar textures as the rest of the music of the game. But yes, we could have had like a very typical French band playing the Hummingbird theme, if you will. But it's also a matter of taking some elements from the culture and integrating it into the bigger, sort of larger instrumentation of the game. Yeah, it was a lot of fun taking sort of Nico's influences and blending them in with the rest of the music of the game.
Yeah, because it has its own identity, and yet it still sounds like it's part of the same soundtrack, which is, it's got to be a tough balancing act, because I'm sure you want these areas to sound distinctive and have their own musical signature, and yet they've got to, you know, play nicely with the rest of the music. So what are some of the things you do to make sure that the soundtrack, you know, sounds cohesive?
Good question. as you'll notice, I mean, I write a lot of music. I'm used to writing music, but I don't talk about music as much. So this is a learning experience. I'd say that it's very instinctive most of the time. And I don't know if I succeed. I always succeed. But I think the instrument palette does help, having the same sort of instrumentation or, you know, similar instrumentation overall in the game, and inserting foreign elements into that instrumentation once in a while and blending it so that it feels like it's from the same place. But let me see if I can give you an example here. I think what does help is that for this game, everything you see, the whole world is part of Stella in a way. So we're into Stella's world. And for this reason, the main theme of the game, Stella's theme, is, I give hints of the theme here and there, and there are sort of brothers and cousins of that theme that are all over the game. And sometimes there's like a simple line from Stella's theme that appears somewhere, and that sort of reminds us that, yeah, we're still in Stella's world. So using that kind of thematic development helps. Also, like I said, keeping that sort of bass orchestration, so having the orchestra, the violins, the cellos, the woodwinds as sort of always sort of present in the arrangements, and then introducing those foreign elements in there that are not part of the score. And in the case of Furugawa, we have Sakuachi in there. sort of a traditional flute. We have also a standard flute, orchestral flute. So the two of them are sort of communicating between each other and talking to each other. And within the notes and the melodies that are playing, there are hints of, you know, parts of the theme, of Stella's theme, that come in. And that's the same thing with in other parts of the game. If you're in Oxbury, for example, there are motifs in there that are that you can find in Stella's theme, but they're sort of hidden within a trumpet line or, you know, a guitar line. And it doesn't feel the same because it's played by a different instrument at a different rhythm, but you still sort of get that that identity. So that's I guess that's a way to do it. I don't think too much about it. Sometimes I just try to immerse myself in the images, in the story, in the characters, and just see what comes out. And if I feel that I'm straying too far away from the identity that I had established for the music, well, the musical identity for the game, then I sort of go like, okay, I should maybe bring a little bit back towards the original intention of the, well, the original musical identity. And I work from there.
Well, it must be such an interesting, almost like a puzzle, I would think, picking out what's important to take away or what's important to experience from these different settings or the different islands and what makes them unique. And so what were some of the other locations that you really enjoyed kind of giving a musical signature to?
It was all a lot of fun. Furugawa was great. I mean, I had a lot of fun writing that one. Hummingbird as well. I also liked writing the sort of darker themes and melodies of the last islands you go through. Crow's End, for example, in the Crow's End area. But maybe I can tell a story that sort of encompasses like the process of writing for those sort of regions. So Nico is from France. I'm from Montreal, so I was born in Montreal. And for the Oxbury's theme, Oxbury is supposed to be Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you know, the way it's
cool.
Designed, it looks a lot like Montreal, and it's supposed to have the same kind of feel and identity. And Nico told me Oxbury should sound like Montreal. You know, What does Montreal sound like? Oxbury is Montreal, so this is what he told me. But he has a very different perspective on Montreal than I have, because he's not from here originally. So when he came here, it was sort of a new, almost, you know, traveling experience. And so it was, you know, he's going to have a totally different perspective of what Montreal sounds like than I'm going to have. So he had sort of an idea of Montreal as being almost like a southern country folk US, you know, from the United States sounding music. Whereas I, you know, being, you know, going to the jazz festival every summer in Montreal in July, I had this idea of something that would be a little bit more jazzy. But one thing that's definitely there in Montreal is that when you're walking in the streets in the summer, and there's a jazz festival playing in the neighborhood, or you're close to the downtown area, you hear these jazz instruments reverberating throughout the city, you know, in an echoey kind of way. And there's this presence that's always there. So the idea of having like a solo trumpet on there felt like it respected a little bit of both cultures in a way. Having guitar there felt like it respected both the ideas. So we sort of met in the middle there. It doesn't sound typically Southern, but it doesn't sound typically like jazz music either, and it's somewhere in the middle, I guess.
Yeah, that's fascinating. As you were talking, I was trying to imagine what I think Montreal sounds like, because I've been there a lot too, and my first thought was jazz as well. So it was very interesting to hear how Nico didn't think about that for Montreal at all. So, but the blend of it is just, it's really brilliant. And now that you mention that it's the sound of Montreal, I can totally hear that. So that's a really cool story.
Yeah. I honestly still don't know what Montreal sounds like. It's too close. Mm-hmm. It's home, you know, it's too close to me personally. But I think I like this idea of coming from two different worlds or two different sort of, way of thinking about music and then sort of meeting in the middle. I like that.
Yeah.
I think it's challenging for me as well. Sort of a mental puzzle sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. You touched on the end title song, What Will You Leave Behind? And your partner, Maud Plant Husaruk?
Yes. It's a Ukrainian name.
She's got such a gorgeous voice. And it's such a wonderful song. Did you write those lyrics as well?
Yes, I wrote the music and the lyrics. Yeah, there's a story behind how all this whole song came about. And it's a long story, but to keep it sort of on the short side and not go into too many of the, what I call like the backs and forths with, you know, distributors and business partners and stuff like that, you know, like the business side of things that happen. Essentially what happened is that they were going to need an original song to feature on an animated trailer that was going to be released when announcing the game was out. This animated trailer, you can see it on Thunder Lotus's YouTube channel. And they hired an external studio to do the animation for this one, Knights of the Light Table. A really talented team, but they were going to need a song. So there was this idea of licensing a song, this idea of having original music. And in the end, we we decided to pursue an original song. And the song sort of uses two themes from the game, the Song of Growth theme and the Stella's theme as well, in the chorus, if you will. So I sort of laid down the architecture of the song and wrote some lyrics over that, went back and forth with the team over the lyrics. We agreed this was, you know, the way to go, but I had this very clear sound in mind of what I wanted the vocals to sound like. And since the song was going to be used on an animation trailer, I wanted to have this orchestral sound that, you know, lifts off and soars. And to be able to have that sound, you needed a voice that worked with that kind of aesthetic. And I wanted someone that could do a good blend between classical singing and pop singing, to get close to something that you would have in sort of 90s Disney movies, that blends sort of the musical theater's way of singing and the classical singing sometimes. I wanted something close to that. And I had met this very talented singer called, her name is Timber. She's from Nashville in the United States. And I mean, we had discussed collaborating, and I thought her voice was perfect. I was a fan of her music, and she blends pop and classical aesthetic really well in her music. So I reached out to her, and I was thrilled that she agreed to do the project. However, it was important for me to demonstrate what the song was going to be to the Thunder Lotus team before going ahead and, you know, hiring the singer and going ahead with the original song concept and process. And me and Maud, we were, which is mode in French, we were isolated in the countryside. We had just come back from India, where we were shooting a documentary together, and we were in quarantine because we had people living in our apartment in Montreal. And I know she has a beautiful voice, so I asked her to do the demo for the song so that I could send it to the Thunder Lotus team. And, you know, they loved the demo. They really loved her voice. But it didn't quite work with the arrangement, because we needed a singer that could really go soaring into those classical sort of notes and aesthetic. And so that allowed them to say, you know, okay, let's go forward with the song and let's do this. So I started working remotely with Timber. She was sending tracks back and forth to me. I was mixing, getting approval from the team. Eventually, we got a version of the song that we were all happy with, a version of the song and the vocals, and really Timber's voice worked perfectly for that arrangement. Her voice really cut through the orchestral arrangement and really followed the dynamics of the song, that the song itself was following the dynamics of the trailer, the animated trailer. However, they said, oh, you know, we really liked Maud's voice, and I said, you know what, if we have time at the end of the process, I'll try another version of the song that's softer. And I'll try to record it with her for the end credits. And, you know, 2 weeks before launch, I had finished nearly all the music for the game, and we had a little bit of time. So we got together and recorded What Will You Leave Behind, the end credits version that you hear in the game and in the soundtrack right now as it is.
Together, and All the steps one takes to move on to a place the world don't see to us all, but it's okay, we'll be together.
It's a much softer version that works with her style of singing, which is really quiet but really emotional. In the end, I'm super happy with both versions. I mean, the Timber version worked really well for the trailer, and her song worked really well. Her version of the song worked really well for the end credits. But it was kind of a, you know, we had done, you know, Christmas songs for fun in the past, you know, but this was the first like real professional thing we were doing together in terms of music and collaboration. So it was really fun. It was really interesting. And I'm so happy people are like this version of the song. I mean, they get really emotionally attached to it.
Well, it's the perfect wrap up, honestly, for all of the emotions that you've been going through, this kind of roller coaster in the game. And it's nice to just take a moment and kind of reflect on what the experience has been like. So it's a really wonderful fit. So I'm glad that you were able to use it and not just the more high energy version for the trailer. So it's just been so much fun to really dig in and get an idea of, you know, what you went through to get this soundtrack. And it's just absolutely beautiful. So Max, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, well, thank you, Kate. I really appreciated the talk.